101.1 FM. Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Common Ground Food Co-op. Due to the drastic nature of the COVID-19 pandemic, Common Ground is making some changes to their hours and to their departments, which will affect shoppers. For more information, please visit commonground.coop. Throughout this health emergency, please remember that we're all in this together and we will get through it together. And now stay tuned for this week's episode of Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Annette Bay Pimentel and Jennifer Keelan Chaffins on a new children's book called All the Way to the Top, How One Girl's Fight for Americans with Disabilities Changed Everything. But first, disability news for the week of July 20th, 2020. School leaders concerned about a possible onslaught of special education litigation as a result of the pandemic want Congress to grant them liability protections regarding their obligations under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. The School Superintendents Association, as well as the National School Boards Association and the Association of Educational Services Agencies, are calling on Congress to include protections in the next COVID-19 response legislation. The three groups said the surveys of school leaders across the nation show growing concern about unparalleled rates of litigation as schools struggle to follow through with students' individualized education programs during the pandemic. The request comes as lawmakers are expected to start piecing together another coronavirus relief bill in the coming weeks. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky has indicated that he wants liability protections for businesses, schools, and others included in the bill, though it's unclear what that could mean for special education specifically. The push for liability protections is just the latest effort from school leaders to ease their obligations under IDEA during the pandemic. This spring, groups representing school administrators pressed Congress and the U.S. Department of Education to grant temporary waivers, freeing them from some provisions of the IDEA. Disability advocacy groups have insisted that no waivers of special education law are warranted despite the extraordinary circumstances presented by COVID-19. Fears about increased litigation are unfounded, said Denise Style Marshall, CEO of the Council of Parent Attorneys and Advocates, or COPE, a nonprofit that represents special education attorneys. Said Marshall, quote, "They fail to make the case that COVID-19 pandemic has caused or will result in a multitude of lawsuits. Anticipating and predicting are hardly conclusive. There is no acknowledgement at all of the very serious harm some students are suffering or schools that have not even tried to meet their obligations. Our position from day one remains the same. No waivers. That includes sweeping liability protections," end quote. The Trump administration is holding off on implementing a Medicaid rule establishing a new standard for what counts as home and community-based services for people with disabilities. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services said it would delay the compliance deadline for a 2014 regulation detailing criteria that programs must meet in order to be considered community-based and eligible to be paid through Medicaid home and community community-based services waivers. Under the rule, home and community-based settings must be places that individuals choose to live that are integrated in and provide full access to the community. They must also offer privacy, dignity, and respect, and allow people with disabilities the ability to make independent choices about their daily activities, physical environment, and who they are in contact with. The criteria apply to homes as well as day and job training programs and other non-residential offerings provided through waivers. Originally, there was a 5-year transition period for states to come into compliance with the regulation, but the Trump administration already extended that deadline by 3 years to 2022. Now the administration is pointing to the unprecedented challenges presented by COVID-19 as it announces another delay, this time to March 17th of 2023. The announcement drew mixed reaction from disability advocates. As the mother of a child with autism who is also an emergency medical technician, has developed sensory kits providing tools for patients with autism to cope with the flashing lights and sirens during an ambulance ride. EMT and mom Amber Horton sees firsthand the challenges that kids with sensory issues face in their everyday lives. Said Horton, quote, "When I considered how overwhelming an ambulance ride could be for a person with sensory processing issues, it was important for me to find a way to improve that experience," end quote. The kits include a weighted blanket, noise-canceling earmuffs, sunglasses to dim bright lights, and communication tools for kids to describe their pain to first responders. Horton has since installed sensory kits in every ambulance at her company, allowing paramedics to help every patient with autism in Muskegon County, Michigan, to deal with the stress of an ambulance ride. Horton came up with the idea a few years ago, and after receiving a $700 grant from the Michigan Community Services Commission, decided to pursue it. The grant allowed her to build 20 sensory kits and outfit all 17 ambulances. Horton said the kits are essential not only to help patients feel more comfortable, but also to keep them from potentially hurting themselves. Horton said, quote, "When people with autism experience a sensory meltdown, they go into a full-on panic mode. They will literally break their own body to get out of it. They don't know what they're doing. They just want to be away from the situation, and it causes them to have medical emergencies, and they can die. I want to avoid that," end quote. Along with supplying ambulances with the sensory kits, she also is working to educate her colleagues about the autism spectrum and what it may look like in patients. Horton is conducting training with EMTs to teach them how to use the sensory kits and how to deal with a patient experiencing sensory issues. And for ProMed personnel, the training was a welcome opportunity for paramedics to learn how to help patients with autism. And finally, online retailer Zappos is looking to make it easier for people with differing needs to buy shoes. The online retailer is testing a first-of-its-kind program starting this week that allows customers to buy just one shoe or purchase a pair of shoes that includes two different sizes. Known as the Single and Different Size Shoes Test Program, the offering is part of Zappos Adaptive, an effort launched in 2017 to provide a collection of clothing and footwear to meet the needs of those with various disabilities. According to Dana Zumbo, business development manager for Zappos Adaptive, quote, "The Single and Different Shoe Sizes test program is very close to our hearts. We wanted our community to know that we heard them and continue to listen and innovate based on their needs and wants. Customer service is our number one goal, and we're endlessly committed to ensuring that everyone feels comfortable and confident in their own shoe or shoes." During the pilot phase, the program will include styles from a limited number of brands. Zappos said it hopes to increase the number of participating brands and available styles as the program grows. And that's the news for this week. Step on my blue suede shoes. Knock me down, step in my face.
slander my name all over the place and do anything that you wanna do. But honey, lay off of my shoes, don't you step on my blue suede shoes.
And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander. I'm joined today on the phone by two guests, Annette Bay Pimentel and Jennifer Keelan Chaffins, on a new children's book that they have both been involved in. And it's all about the ADA, which is being celebrated this week I guess officially it's Sunday, July 26th, which will be the 30-year anniversary of the ADA. So a very exciting time for all the people who worked so hard to make that happen 30 years ago. So welcome to the show, both Annette and Jennifer. I'm so glad to have you.
Thank you
very much. I'm glad to be here.
So why don't we start with introductions. Annette, why don't you go first and just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the in writing this book.
Yes, I would be happy to. I am a children's book writer. I write about I write true stories about things that happened in American history. And I was looking for a subject recently, and my interest in the ADA goes back to when I was a student at University of California, Berkeley. I had never before attended school with people with disabilities, but there I had classmates with disabilities, and I was in a performing group with one woman who used a wheelchair, and we had a class together, and we're heading to a rehearsal across campus, and so we decided we'd walk over together. And it was like I had never seen this campus before. As I looked at it with her eyes, we would go one direction and there would be a curb, we'd go another direction and there would be a staircase. And I expressed my amazement to her, and she just looked at me and she said, "You have no idea." And so a few years later, I was really interested to follow the passage of the ADA. And then I watched while the world around me transformed. You know, my children all attended school with kids with disabilities, and I saw curb cutaways, a lot of things, although it's not a perfect solution, a lot of things in the world changed. And as I was trying to think what I wanted to write about for kids, I thought, you know, I don't think kids understand what the ADA has accomplished and what a valuable piece of legislation it is. So I decided I wanted to write about it, but it's a little tricky to write about a law. And so I was looking for a way into the story for young readers. And as I was researching, I came across Jennifer's story. And as soon as I started reading about Jennifer, I knew that I had found the story that I wanted to tell. It was a story not only about the ADA, but also about a girl who managed to do a very heroic, if small, act that helped change the world. But I knew it wasn't my story. It was Jennifer's story, so I only wanted to do it if Jennifer would be deeply involved in the project. And so I reached out to Jennifer.
And so this would be a good time for Jennifer to introduce herself then, wouldn't it, Jennifer?
It would be.
My name is Jennifer Keelan Chaffin, and I am currently involved in disability rights and advocacy. And like Annette said, she got a hold of me. And so it turned out to be a really cool experience.
So what is the story? What did Annette write about related to your life?
What was really cool about getting in touch with Annette is she was able to write about my involvement in the disability rights movement and a very famous protest called the Capitol Crawl. And we were actually trying to the ADA passed, because the ADA was being stuck in committee because Congress was stalling the passage. And so that's basically what the book is about, is my involvement in the Capitol Crawl and in the passage of the ADA.
So for those people who are not familiar and don't understand what you're talking about when you talk about the Capitol Crawl, what exactly was that event like? What happened?
Well, Congress was stalling the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and to show Congress why it was important to pass this law, all of these disability rights groups converged into one rally and protest, and we all went to Washington, D.C. And one of the things that we wanted to do in order to show Congress why the ADA was important to pass was we climbed the steps of the U.S. Capitol to show Congress what it was like for people with disabilities who are facing barriers every day.
And so these are, how many people were involved in the Capitol crawl, roughly?
Anywhere from 68 to 100 people were specifically involved in the Capitol crawl.
And so we're talking about people who use wheelchairs in their lives. And so many of them, I'm sure some people are able to walk in a limited way, but many are not able to walk. So they, in essence, crawled up the Capitol steps, right?
Yes, yes. We crawled up the Capitol steps to show Congress a visual representation of the physical barriers that people with disabilities face every day.
And
I'd like to point out that Jennifer was 8 years old when she did this.
Seriously, you were 8 years old.
I was 8 years old.
Wow.
I joined the disability rights movement at age 6. And so by the time I did the Capitol crawl, I was already what you would call a seasoned activist.
Oh, that's pretty impressive, Jennifer, I must say. Tell me more about your activism since the Capitol crawl and some of the things that you've been involved with.
Well, since the Capitol crawl, I've been involved in student advocacy. I've done IEPs for students with disabilities. I've also been currently involved with some issues that people with disabilities are facing in housing,
mm-hmm.
because I think that housing is a big issue that we still have to deal with. And so currently I've been focused on is accessible, affordable housing for people with disabilities.
And are you satisfied with the results of the ADA, or is there still, in your opinion, work to do?
I think that the ADA has a lot of accomplishments. We have physical access, and so in that respect, the ADA has done great work. But in my opinion, I believe that we still have a lot of work to do.
In what way? I mean, I think I know from my perspective, I think I know what needs to be done, but I'd like to hear your words on that.
I think that one of the things that we still need to work on is the awareness that people with disabilities still face every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I've noticed is like things like, you know, the inside of a restaurant may be quite accessible, and they have handrails in the bathroom, and they have wide aisles, and they have all those things, and then they might have a step by the front door to get in. And I think that oftentimes that people who are business owners just don't have a complete understanding of what's needed. Have you seen that too?
I have seen that. I've seen that, you know, even though we Now it's been 30 years since the ADA has passed, I think that there are situations in which we have gone backwards a bit, because I've seen situations where new restaurants or new housing construction doesn't have any ADA features.
And so in that respect,
I think that we, you know, that we've gone backwards a bit, and that's part of the work that we still need to do.
Absolutely, which is really why the book came about. So, Annette, I'm coming back to you, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about, I'm assuming that you did not come from disability background at all. It was until you got to college and you met somebody who was involved in this world of of disability access. What is your hope for the children's book that you wrote?
I hope that kids will understand that disability rights are a civil right, that and understand the reason that they're important. I think that they're important because they allow people to connect with each other. And without access for people with disabilities, then we're needlessly closing off a fairly large proportion of our citizenry and population from each other. And I think that Jennifer's story is really great at showing how children can advocate for bridging that gap, both kids with disabilities and also as Jennifer and I have gone around to schools, then there's been a lot of really great conversation from the kids about ways that they can be advocates for their classmates with disabilities. And so I hope that they won't take for granted the gains that have come with the ADA because, you know, even as your news segment pointed out, I think those rights are, there's a move to erode some of those rights. And I think it's hard to understand what's being eroded without understanding what was gained.
Absolutely. Can you talk a little bit about what ways you suggest to children and how to advocate?
So I'll give you two quick examples. There's one part of the story where Jennifer was in a classroom and her classmates told her that they said, "You'll never be one of us." And when we read that part of the book in schools, there's an audible gasp. And afterwards, we've had really sweet experiences where kids have come up to talk to Jennifer and have told her what they would tell another student in that situation. And so I think that the book gives them a chance to think through what it would take to respond with empathy to someone who is different from them because they're seeing it from Jennifer's point of view. And so my hope is that that will give them the tools that they need so when they face that situation that they'll be able to respond. Part of the book that I think is really important in the ongoing struggle is the final page of it. And this was a challenge in the writing of it because we wanted to have a hopeful ending that felt like a conclusion. But the truth is that that there's still a fight for disability rights going on. And so we had to find a way to help kids feel a sense of completion and like that the book had ended happily without suggesting that everything is over. And so I'll just read a few words. Laws like the ADA don't change things overnight. Entrances have to be rebuilt, sidewalks redesigned, buses reengineered. Slowest of all, minds have to change. So Jennifer will continue shouting and waving signs, organizing and explaining. She will continue fighting for what she knows is right. So I hope kids will leave the book with a sense of mission.
Yeah, sounds very powerful, especially for a children's book. You know, you expect a children's book to be fairly light reading, but this really does have serious content in it. So that's pretty incredible. I know that go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I think that content reflects Jennifer's experience. I think she was very serious about these issues, not only as an adult, but also as a child. And I think it does provide children a role model of what's possible to do as a child, to choose something that you really care about. And as Jennifer said over and over again in our school visits, to raise your voice to speak about those things that you care about.
I think the advantage that kids have in schools now is that they are oftentimes integrated in with lots of people with differing needs. And so they're growing up understanding that people need accommodation, that they need, you know, adaptation, that they need to have access to learning in different ways. That wasn't true when I was in school. And
that
so
is very much my experience as well. Yeah. And I look at what my children have had in school. And while it's far from perfect, it is so much better than what I had going through school.
Yeah. Now, Jennifer, does that give you hope that things will get better more quickly?
I think that that it's just a testament from where we've been mm-hmm. and where we are today. And so I think that that, you know, one of the main reasons why I wanted to do this book was I wanted to be able to teach the next generation the importance of the disability rights movement, the ADA, and the Capitol crawl. And I think that this book does a wonderful job of opening that door.
Yeah, I'm sure you must have seen Crip Camp by now, have you not?
Yes, I have. I'm actually in the movie.
Seriously?
I'm at the end.
You are in Crip Camp?
Yes, I am in the end of the movie.
Okay. Well, I'll have to watch it more closely and see. Was that during the Capitol crawl, or was that something else?
That is actually where I met Judy Heumann.
Yeah.
So at the end of the movie, when they show the Capitol crawl, and the little girl that I think it's the last scene of the documentary, the little girl that's making their way up to the top, and then the woman that gives her a hug when she reaches the top of the step.
Mm-hmm.
That's me and my mother.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I'll have to watch it again with different eyes this time. And so I know somebody in that movie. That's pretty amazing.
And I actually met Judy Heumann in San Francisco when we were doing our San Francisco protest. So
yeah, she's an amazing woman. Is she your model for the way you want to be as you grow up? Well, you are grown up now, so yeah, as you get older.
You know, during my involvement in the disability rights movement, I had many mentors and teachers, and she was definitely one of them.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was Justin Dart.
Of course.
Who's known as the father of the ADA. So, you know, these were my teachers and my mentors as I was growing up. So,
yeah. As you look back on the publication of this book that you both collaborated on, is there anything in there that you wish you would have done differently, or are you really, really happy with the result?
I am very proud of this book and very proud of the results that has come forth from it. I think that, like you said, there's a lot to unpack there,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's a great tool to open up that door and introduce the next generation to this important part of history.
Yeah, and I think what the result that could happen from work like this is for this generation to grow up and say to each other, so what's the big deal? You know, why haven't we done this since the beginning of time?
That would be a wonderful outcome.
Yeah, it would be.
That would be the best.
It would be. I mean, because, you know, some of those accommodations and access needs that people have help everybody. It's not just people using wheelchairs, you know, so
absolutely true. Yeah. And another thing that I realized as I was working on the book, because of the spot that I came to the disability rights movement from, is that while I do not currently have a disability, I and most other people are going to get a disability at some point in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not really an other kind of issue. It's an us issue.
Yes. Yes. Very well said. If you live long enough, and if you live a long life, you will end up with some kind of a disability at some point. That's just a fact of aging. So, yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to have to leave it there. Is there any last words you want to say before we go, either one of you?
I think that, you know, for me, one of the things that people have been always asking me is, why did you do it at such a young age? And I think that for me, the reason why I felt so strongly about it was because as a child who got to be so closely involved in this movement, I realized that I had a great responsibility, not just to represent myself, but to represent my generation and future generations of kids with disabilities. And so, I realized that this was not just about myself.
And it's the book All the Way to the Top, How One Girl's Fight for Americans with Disabilities Changed Everything. Thank you both, Annette Bay Pimentel and Jennifer Keelan Chaffins. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. No, I won't stay.